unfiltered, uncensored. Ready to take on the issues the mainstream media is afraid to engage in. Bringing you the hard-hitting truth. This is the Mass Resistance Radio Program. On Boston's 1330 WRCA. Now, your host and voice of the Mass Resistance Movement, Brian Kamiker.
Hello, everyone. This is Brian Kamiker, and you are listening to Radio Free Massachusetts, Mass Resistance Radio, here on WRCA 1330 on your dial. The show is heard every Saturday from 11 till 12, 11 till noon, I should say. And it's up on our website all the time. We usually get it up around Saturday evening at massresistance.org, where you can hear all of our past shows, and some of the really good shows. Also, go to our blog, massresistance.net. Get involved. Go to massresistance.org. Get involved. I'm here with Amy.
This is Amy. And be sure to call the radio station and let them know how much you love this program. Bring a little diversity to Central Square.
Are bringing diversity to Central Square in Cambridge. And, of course, we know they're listening because the homosexual hate bloggers, they're going nuts on about our show. They spend enormous amounts of time talking about the trivialities about what we say on the show.
Like if you make a little slip like you just did or like I just did, they go nuts over that. But guess what? Yeah. They never deal with the substantive content of what we say because they can't answer any of the facts that we're presenting and shoot them down. You can't shoot down
facts. What I love
is
when I say, oh, man, they go nuts. I think it's because they have issues with manhood.
It could be.
But anyway, this is going to be a great show. You know, all you homosexual bloggers,
blog away.
Blog away. We're going to talk about part three of the transgender movement and the legal issues.
And we're looking at the Transgender Rights and Hate Crimes Bill in the Massachusetts legislature. That's H-1722. We've done two shows on it already, and we're going to continue.
Yeah, and we're going to have Chip Faulkner of Citizens for Limited Taxation talking about some really interesting stuff. Mike Heath of the Christian Civic League of Maine will be talking about the social effects of gambling. This is really a lot of good stuff. And keep in mind that coming up on the 3rd of October is the forum that Mass Resistance is helping put on in Acton at Acton-Boxborough Regional High School on the Laramie Project.
It's in the evening at 7:30.
It's in the evening, 7:30. You can find out more at the Mass Resistance website.
Now, there must be something going on behind the scenes that we're not aware of.
Well, you're right. I mean, because, as you know, the parents in Acton and Boxborough have become outraged at this really crude homosexual play that they're putting on. And you're right. Something's going on. Because
the school committee is talking to some of the parents and want some of those parents to come in and speak because they're concerned about security issues. Now, why would you be concerned about a security issue on a forum that's talking about the content of a play that's being produced at the high school?
Yeah, apparently the school committee has called a special meeting, small meeting, to talk about the possibility that people might commit violence or something like that.
Well, we don't know, but that's what the other side is like. You know, they don't want the truth to get out, like we said earlier.
Oh, and you know, the other thing I guess that's which is interesting is that the drama parents group we've been told by someone who was there, and the drama department is advising people not to go to this forum because they don't want them to hear what's going on. You know, this is par for the course, ladies and gentlemen. You know, imagine a school saying, don't come to a parents' meeting because we don't want people to hear their message. There's a good reason
for
that.
Get back to that. Today we're going to talk about the Transgender Rights Crimes Bill.
Well, let's get started.
Well, so far we've had two shows. The first one we talked about some of the things that transgender, transsexual people will be demanding in terms of their health coverage and some of the things they have done to them that they now want us, the taxpayers, to pay for, the employers to pay for, whatever.
That's show number one.
Show number two, we spoke about public toilets.
You could hear that on the website.
Yeah, and it's interesting, the toilets issue, that's part of public accommodations. Toilets, public restrooms fall under public accommodations. But we're going to talk a little bit more about this whole public accommodations issue, right, because that, I think, is one of the greatest dangers of this bill.
Yeah. And now this is, what's the name of the bill?
Transgender Rights and Hate Crimes Bill, H, that stands for House, 1722. It's in the legislature now. Governor Patrick has promised that he would sign it. And we're concerned that there might actually be a crazy enough majority in our legislature to pass this crazy thing. Yeah. What it would do is change 31 different, I think it's 31 different statutes currently on the books to insert the phrase that you cannot discriminate on the basis of gender, identity, or expression. Now, how is gender, identity, or expression defined?
Besides being madness.
Yeah.
Okay, it is the term gender, identity, or expression, as Section 7 of H. 1722 says, shall mean a gender-related identity, appearance, expression, or behavior of an individual regardless of the individual's assigned sex at birth.
That means there's no such thing as male or female, but somebody like a doctor or a parent assigns you a sex at birth.
Yeah.
Well, we can ignore that, and we can be whatever we want, and we can behave any way we want, and any place outside of our home, and no one can do anything about it. That's what it really is saying.
Yeah. So, somebody decides that he's something or she's a man, and that's it.
Yeah.
And nobody can criticize that as a hate crime.
Yeah. No longer are we speaking of two sexes, male and female. Nope.
This is going to be in Massachusetts law.
Well, if it passes, they call that, heterosexism, or no, it's not heterosexism. They have so many new words. What is it?
It's transphobia.
It's transphobia to think of there being only two sexes. That's right. I guess that's one.
Oh man.
So anyhow, one of the interesting things Matt Barber has pointed out on a column he recently wrote. He's at the Concerned Women for America. He says he's speaking of the federal version of this ENDA, which sits atop a house of cards, because even our Supreme Court at the federal level has devised a three-part test to determine whether a class of person qualifies as a true minority. The very first test is you have to be defined by an immutable characteristic, such as skin color. Okay, you're born with a certain skin color, and unless you're Michael Jackson, that doesn't change during the course of your life, or unless you go to some weird tanning salon. So one reason they have defined the transsexual, transgender activists have put this crazy definition into the bill is because they're trying to say that it is mutable, but they're also wanting to be considered a special class of people. So, that's a trap they've got themselves into. I don't know how they're going to get out of it. Clearly, they're not a man is born a man.
And we'll always be a man.
We'll
the DNA
man.
Will always be the same, no matter what idiotic.
And yet the transgender activists are saying that they should be considered a special class of persons. That's just not going to fit with certainly not the way the Supreme Court deals with this at this point. So, well, that's a problem. The other thing about the public accommodations that's really disturbing is, if you read all of the things enumerated currently in Massachusetts statutes, it basically sounds like public accommodations is anything outside of a private home. There's an incredibly long list of things, of places that are included as public accommodations where we would no longer be able to discriminate on the basis of gender identity or expression, right? One of the things...
This stuff is so weird. It's so radical. I think most people hear what we're talking about and just simply
can't believe it.
I think most people's minds can't process it. It's so bizarre.
Well, I think what we need to start with is the current state definition in Massachusetts law of public accommodations. Okay, here is where you no longer can discriminate against people who identify themselves according to gender identity or expression.
A man wearing, you know, earrings and long hair.
Well,
and
Brian, I mean, it can go way beyond that. Yeah. We tried to point out in maybe our first show on this a couple weeks ago. Let's take a woman who's had her breasts removed, and we read the autobiographical piece from that one book, and the woman who had that done to herself out in California or Denver, wherever she was just dying to take her shirt off in public and tan herself in a public park. Okay, and that for her was her gender expression. She was trying to express herself as the male she wanted to be. So we're going to have women walking around this sidewalk or Boston Common with their shirts off, with their scars showing where their breasts used to be. Okay, that's another example. It's not just men in dresses.
What is really at issue here is people who are having very, very serious internal problems within themselves.
But a man could do that, a woman could do that, I mean, and the police would not be able to arrest them.
These are people that are having, you know, serious emotional problems.
So getting back to the definition as it exists in state law now of public accommodations, where we may not discriminate. Any place, whether licensed or unlicensed, which is open to and accepts or solicits the patronage of the general public. And then it goes on to say, here's a big long list of places that are included, but it's not limited to the places.
Schools.
No, but it also says not limited to the places named in the definition.
Okay.
Wide open.
It would include churches. I mean,
exactly. Now, think about that. Any place that accepts or solicits the patronage of the general public. Now, bear in mind that this H-1722 here in Massachusetts does not have an exemption for religious institutions, whether it's a church, a religious school, or whatever, or, you know, a charity
It should have an exemption for, you know, just normalcy, because this is so... You know, I keep saying the word, you know, lunatic and insane, but even making anybody go by this.
Well, see, just as ANDA is unconstitutional on the face of it because it's pitting churches and religious institutions and people's religious beliefs directly against this crazy idea that you can't discriminate on these areas of whether it's sexual orientation or gender identity. Here in Massachusetts, think about this. A church, let's just look at your local newspaper. They advertise. They do advertise.
Oh, yeah.
They have notices, here's when our service is, or they'll have a box advertisement, or they'll be listed in the calendar section. They're soliciting people to come to their church.
And it's getting more and more. I mean, there was one church in Newton that used to advertise on the radio, come here, we don't care what you believe.
And patronage of the general public, that doesn't mean just that you're giving them money for a tangible product. It could be that you're, you know, giving them $10 a week as a spiritual gift. I mean, whatever. I mean, I think that churches are clearly going to be covered in this H-1722.
But clearly schools are.
Well, yeah, we'll get to the schools later. In coming weeks, we're going to talk specifically about schools, the sections of this bill that deal with the schools, and the Commission on Gay and Lesbian Youth. We're also going to talk about insurance and real estate. We're going to talk about the Mass Commission Against Discrimination, which is the biggest Pandora's box. And then we'll get back to hate crimes in some detail. But right now, if you look at this list, it's really terrifying how many places are covered by the public accommodations bill. Specifically in our law right now, we have, if you look down this list here, any place, whether licensed or unlicensed, open to and accepting the solicit or solicits the patronage of the public. Okay, now it's not limited to this list, it goes on to say, but here we go.
Okay, we have an inn, tavern, hotel, shelter, roadhouse, motel, trailer, camp, or resort for transient or permanent guests or patrons seeking housing or lodging, food, drink, entertainment, health, recreation, or rest.
We have a carrier, conveyance, or elevator for the transportation of persons, whether operated on land, water, or the air, stations, terminals, facilities.
Yeah, we have gas stations, garage, retail store, establishment, those including those dispensing personal services, restaurant, bar, eating place where food, beverages, confections are their derivatives are sold for consumption on or off premises.
And one of my favorites,
restrooms, oh, boy.
Barbershops, beauty parlors, bathhouse, seashore facilities, swimming pool. Okay, so we're going to...
Oh, man. I said it again.
There we go. Bathhouse. Woo. Okay, boardwalk or other public highway. Now, that includes a lot. I would think that includes sidewalks. Auditorium, theater, music hall, meeting place, or hall. Now, here's a very important phrase. Including the common halls of buildings. Common halls of buildings?
Yeah.
That could be any building that's not a private residence. Common halls of buildings.
Yeah.
Okay, anything's going to be happening in those common halls.
Yeah.
Public amusement locations, recreation, sport, exercise, or entertainment places. Bear in mind also that there's a special section of this bill, before I forget to mention it. Single-sex health clubs have to allow people, no matter what their gender identity or expression.
So they have these, you know, near... not too far from where I live, they have these women's health clubs. Mm-hmm. The women's health clubs will have to allow men to use their facilities, including the showers, if the men say, well, I'm really a woman.
Yeah, whether operations have happened or not. Okay, or whether they're halfway in between on their operations or not. Okay, let's just finish this list, then we'll take a break. Public libraries, museums, planetariums, hospital, dispensary, clinics, blah, blah, blah. Okay, now remember, not limited to this list. These places are all definitely covered by the law, but it's not limited to this list. So.
Okay. So let's take a quick break. Catch our breath. We'll be right back. Brian Kammacher, Mass Resistance Radio. Don't go away. And we're back. Mass Resistance Radio here on WRCA Radio, Radio Free Massachusetts. We're talking about the Transgender Rights and Hate Crimes Bill now before the legislature, which will push this on public accommodations. And people do not realize how this is going to affect them.
I think everyday scenarios are going to be very helpful to people. And we have sort of a list here of some of the things that we might be seeing next year. Let's take a hotel or a convention site. They're not going to be allowed to turn down a transgender cross-dresser convention. Already, we saw at the Sheraton Hotel in Danvers last year that they were afraid to turn down the leather convention, the bondage.
There'll probably be some gender
sadomasochism.
Identity issues with that.
Oh, yeah. A lot of the people involved in that are involved in this. I mean, once they, you know, let down all their... boundaries, you know, anything goes. So this is what we're seeing. So the hotels can't say no. And we've got this wonderful Brian McGrory column from January of 2004. This was in the Boston Globe.
Yeah. Now, I remember seeing this. It was about, you know, 3.5 years ago.
Park Plaza Hotel.
Brian McGrory was writes for the metro section of the Boston Globe. And this is what he saw, and I will read this.
This was at the Park Plaza Hotel in Boston, January 2004.
As the elevator door opened, in walked a woman in a leather bustier leading by a dog leash and collar, a man wearing nothing but a string thong. She's not a small woman, quote unquote, the offended guest said. She's overflowing out of this thing, and she has fishnets on. The fetish fair flea market was being held in the upstairs ballroom all weekend, and a bored-looking manager explained to the offended guest that the Park Plaza was a convention hotel and, as such, refused to discriminate against any group. The lobby was literally filled with hulking cross-dressers gallivanting about in skirts, men in leather chaps and little else, obese people with whips, and dwarfs in masks, all of them ready to celebrate. Attendees could visit vendors such as Dungeonware and Happy Tales or take classes such as The Joy of Canes and Flogging 101. The event organizer said to a group, if people are in their rooms having a lot of sex, they're not getting drunk and running down the hallways. Well, isn't that wonderful?
Well, the problem with that is that they may not be in their rooms all the time. They're certainly running around using elevators, lobby, hotel, restaurants.
They're
out on the sidewalk in front of the hotel.
That was the observations of a person just walking through the hotel.
Yeah, that was a guest who was there. I think it may have been a parent with a child, a young child, or it was a grandparent with his grandchild. And he got into the elevator, and there was this horrible vision. The poor little kid's with him there. So he complains to the management. Management says, oh, nothing we can do. Convention Hotel can't discriminate. Well, it was bad enough then. It's going to get worse. That's what we're trying to warn everyone about. So that was in 2004. Now, I'd like to know why Brian McGrory's voice has gone silent on this. Is no one at the Boston Globe paying any attention to this transgender rights bill? This is just insanity, in my opinion, and they're pretending it's not happening. Let's say a restaurant had a private party. You know, the shemale prostitutes and their clients want to have a big get-together in some restaurant. Can't turn them away. How about a museum or a library? They can't turn away a GLBT activist seminar or somebody promoting BDSM, public nudity, public sex, legalized prostitution, polygamy, all of those sorts of conferences they're going to have to allow. They can't say no to any of these. How about a function facility that would like to but can't refuse a seminar on breast removal? Hormone treatments for women and women who are transitioning
breast
to men.
Removal.
Well,
yeah, for breast removal.
Our friend Peter LaBarbera had a report on that very thing back in 2000, I think, down in Washington, D.C. He actually sat in on this appalling seminar. It was a whole convention for women transitioning to men, and he sat in on the breast removal seminars led by the doctors with slides and photographs. Oh, it was just awful to read about.
This is something out of Nazi Germany.
Well, it's going to be happening here. So the other thing, you cannot, in a public accommodation, here, let me read this. This is unbelievable. Section 24 of this bill that we're talking about, H-1722, would even ban establishments from allowing any notice to be posted or circulated, quote, intended to discriminate against or actually discriminating against persons of any sex, gender identity or expression, or sexual orientation. So, let me explain what that means. One scenario. Public libraries are on this list of public accommodations, right?
Mm-hmm.
That means you can't post a notice in a public library about gay marriage. You know, a pro-family perspective on gay marriage. You can't have a discussion group on traditional family values posted in a public library. Once they get this bill on the books, no way can you do that. You will be guilty of illegal discrimination, whether it's sexual orientation or gender identity. You won't even be able to announce a seminar about gender identity and how this is dangerous and we should protect our children from this.
George Orwell is alive and
so
well.
So this is in the bill. How is intention determined? That's not defined either. It says you can't post anything that's intended to discriminate against these groups, whether defined by gender identity or sexual orientation.
You know, it's interesting that we're one of the only pro-family groups that is talking about this.
Well, I think people they were afraid enough of the homosexual activists. I think this is just such a disturbing topic that people don't have the stomach for it. And yet we're supposed to let this happen on our streets.
Right.
So, well, we're talking about it anyhow. So I find that one of the most dangerous passages is that you can't post anything in a public accommodation that might be intended to discriminate against these groups. I mean, if let's say the churches are now public accommodations. They could very well be by the definition we're reading here.
We obviously have no First Amendment anymore.
Well, remember back during Catholic Charities adoption fiasco. Was that in 2005? I think it was 2005. Maybe it was 2006. And Catholic Charities got out of the business of adoptions. I think they were somewhat concerned about this even then.
Yeah. Well, that's a whole different story, and we'll be talking about that in an upcoming show.
I think that it's apropos because churches are sitting back. They should be speaking out against this rather than letting it roll and saying, gee, what if they interpret the law this way? Well, speak out and say, no, that's an absolute violation of our constitutional First Amendment rights. So we've got a major, major challenge to religious freedom coming up here. Now, let's say we've got another issue coming up with schools, which we'll get to later, but just think about the issue in the schools, for instance. That's certainly public accommodations. We've hinted at the restroom issue. It's not just public schools, it's also colleges. If I read this correctly, college dormitories, right now there's a lot of agitation among college students on this issue. But if this bill is passed in Massachusetts, will college dormitories be required to alter their dormitory situations? So a trans male?
Well, the whole thing about in restrooms in general, you can't have a ladies' restroom and a man's restroom anymore by strict interpretation.
Yeah, but now you can't even say that you've got male dormitory rooms and female dormitory rooms.
Well, I guess what it would be whoever thinks he's a male that day or a female that day.
Right. So we've got a guy who's actually a biological male who claims he's a female and demands to live in a girl's dormitory with a female roommate. Okay, well, wow. That could be coming soon. Now, remember, we've pointed this out on the blog. Harvard Business School actually already has, unless they've changed their application since a year ago, their application for admission gives the options male, female, or transgender when you mark your sex. So if Harvard Business School is already doing that on its application for admission, how long can it be before they change their dormitories? But again, if this law is passed, I think colleges in Massachusetts will be forced to have this option for their transgender students to live in whichever dorm room they want to live in.
Right.
So,
you know, I keep saying it, it's complete madness. And you look at the list of legislators that are co-sponsors of this bill. What is going on with these people? It is just absolute lunacy, and supposedly normal people are buying into this.
The phrase that escaped me earlier was binary gender system. See, the transgender activists accuse us all of having a fixation on a binary gender system.
I wonder why.
Which is outmoded, primitive, and Stone Age.
Oh.
And so, you know, what we've got to do is understand that it's not just two genders. Gender is, there are multiple possibilities, and it's fluid. It can change from day to day. So like you said, the guy might think he's a man today, and maybe tomorrow he'll think he's a woman, and depending on how he feels that day, he gets to determine which restroom he uses, blah, blah, blah.
It is. I know I sound like a broken record, but it is madness. Oh. And these supposedly normal state legislators are buying into this.
There's one last thing in this bill. There's a section, I think it's section 26, your treatment of someone could be considered discriminatory. Let's say a waiter in a restaurant thinks a guy is a woman. Well, no. I didn't express that well. We've got a man trying to appear as a woman, but he's not successful. And the waiter's confused, doesn't know, should I address this person as a man or a woman? Well, if the waiter doesn't guess right and do what the customer wants, at that point, it's in the eyes of the customer, it's in the eyes of the guest, whether or not the waiter discriminated. So it's the treatment of someone as perceived by the complaining guest, that's what's going to count. If you don't play the game the right way, you're in trouble. Whoever makes any distinction, discrimination, or restriction on account of someone's sex, gender identity, or expression relative to the admission of any person or his treatment in any place of accommodation, blah, blah, blah. So the treatment you receive in a place of public accommodation is in the statute already, and they're going to add gender identity and expression.
And, you know, people don't understand that the homosexual groups, you know, fresh from their victory on the same-sex marriage amendment, are pushing this thing with unbelievable vigor. People don't understand that this is where the money is going. They do not want to stop. They want to push the envelope to greater depth.
Now, just in case anyone thinks that we're over-interpreting things here, let's remind everybody of what happened out in the city of Oakland, California, in this past year. The U.S. Ninth Circuit Court heard a case argued, actually, by Scott Lively for the good guys. It was a couple of Christian women who were employees of the city of Oakland. They posted on a bulletin board a notice about a discussion group for supporting the natural family. They were accused of hate speech. After all, it was posted in a public accommodation bulletin board, and it went to the Ninth Circuit Court. They actually lost. The Ninth Circuit Court said, yes, it was hate speech.
Wow. Okay, we're gonna continue on this next week. It needs to be said. It needs to be heard. We're gonna take a break, and at the end of the show, we're gonna talk a little more about how you can get involved, because you need to get involved. This will happen unless you stop it. Brian Kamiker, Mass Resistance Radio. We'll be right back. And we're back. This is Mass Resistance Radio, and Brian Kamiker here. Okay, we're going to switch gears a little bit. There's been some serious tax issues and signature gathering issues going on in Massachusetts. You can't trust the state legislature or your government on anything these days. And here to talk a little bit more about it is Chip Faulkner with Citizens for Limited Taxation. Chip, thanks a lot for coming on. Let's see. Now, there were basically two things that we wanted to talk about. The first was on Wednesday, State House hearings on the bills to essentially, you know, break down the initiative petition process. Five bills. The ones that I've got listed here were H 643 by Fagan that would require anyone collecting signatures to wear an identification sticker and all of that. And then H 644 by Fagan that would forbid paid signature gathering. Another one by Alice Wolf that would forbid paid signature gathering. S 436 by Augustus, Senator Augustus, that would... Further, this whole list of things that you have to do. And then another one by Stanley Rosenberg and Robert Spillane that would create a new bureaucracy, a ballot question, title, and summary statement commission. And it looks to me like there's a whole list of bureaucratic rules that they want to pile onto the signature gathering process.
Yeah. One of the things, probably the most ridiculous part of the five bills, was they want to set up a committee. Now, of course, this does not exist at this point. This would be a real change in initiative and referendum. But they want to set up a commission. This is what the name of it is. The Ballot Question Fiscal Impact Statement Commission. I mean, that's almost a full sentence, just the title of the commission. Now, what they would do is they would draft a 100-word explanatory statement describing the fiscal consequence for state and local government finances of an affirmative decision on the question described. So picture this. You got Prop 2.5 on the ballot in 1980. This committee is going to have a 100-word statement saying, this is what's going to happen to the cities and towns if you vote yes. And you know, and I was involved in that battle in 1980, and they were saying the state was going to slide into the sea if there was a yes vote. I actually had a guy at a forum stand up and point to me and said, babies are going to burn in buildings if Prop 2.5 passes. So can you imagine the kind of statement this group would make to people? I mean, it was a very emotional, and this would highly politicize the information you send out to voters. And they were also had this committee, and you actually referred to it earlier, that was going to set up the summary statement and summarize in a sentence or two what the ballot question is. Right now, the way the Secretary of State does it, they have somebody in there that puts out the title summary, and the groups, they send it to the groups for input. And they'll say, well, what do you think of this? Do you have any suggested changes? And they've been very good. I mean, we've never had a problem with them. We've been dealing with the Secretary of State's office and the Elections Division for 30 years. And they've always been right down the middle, nonpartisan. And if this changed into this baloney, these bills ever passed, it would just Katie by the door in terms of
power. Oh, yeah. They obviously, I mean, it's clear, Chip, that what they really want to do, and knowing these particular reps also, is they want to make it so difficult that nobody will ever have a ballot initiative. Because these things are, they're clearly artificial barriers to people gathering signatures. And I've been involved with many ballot initiatives. The one that I remember most was the one to have term limits, and also the to roll back the income tax. Interestingly, the main problem that exists that needs to be fixed is the fact that if one of these passes, the legislature can still ignore it, and in many cases they constitutionally must actually do it if the citizens vote for it.
Yeah, what's outrageous, and I don't understand how people accept this so meekly in this state, is that there have been three issues just in the last few years that the legislature, basically the voters vote yes on it, and they've ignored it. One was our tax rollback in 2000. You voted yes on that, 59%, and in the middle of the downward decline of the tax rate from 5.75 to 5, they stop it in the middle at 5.3. And that's a clear violation of what the ballot question said. This should have been down to 5% by January 1st, 2002. And for the last 4 or 5 years, it's been frozen at that rate. The other one was charitable deductions. In 1998, or maybe it was 2000, the voters overwhelmingly, even more than the rollback, voted to allow people to deduct their state income tax, to deduct the charitable contributions off their state income tax. And we had that 1 year, and then they decided, well, we're not going to let people have that deduction. And then the other one was clean elections.
Right.
And by the way, we opposed clean elections. We didn't like the whole concept. We opposed the ballot question, and because it just got the government too involved in election process. But having said that, when it passed overwhelmingly, we said, okay, the voters have spoken. Now implement it. And as you know, Finneran jumped through hoops to get it negated.
Right. So what happened at the hearing on Wednesday?
Well, the hearing yesterday, like I say, was mostly focused on that popular vote for the presidency. But I heard through the grapevine that bills aren't going anywhere.
Right. So, okay. So,
but see, that's having. But you know, Brian, the problem is when for the last 16 years we've always had a Republican governor who could veto anything. So if the legislature passed one of these bills on INR, you always had Wells, Salucci, Swift, Romney, whatever, be there to veto it.
Right.
Now, if Deval Patrick decides to accept it, it's a much easier process, and that's the thing that we got to worry about.
Right. So it looks like these pretty radical bills are not going to go forward, you think?
Yeah, it doesn't look like it.
Okay.
I know we heard that the chairman, who's Ed Augustus, he's a state senator from Worcester,
yeah.
Although his name is on one of the bills, I don't think it's a top priority for this election laws committee. At least I hope it isn't.
Good, good. Okay. The other thing that's really big in the news is this rush to raise more money for the roads in Massachusetts. They want to raise the tolls, I mean, unbelievably, and they want to also institute gambling to get money for the road repair. Now, you're sitting there saying, why do they suddenly need all of this money? We're not in an inflationary time. Massachusetts already spends probably more money than nearly every other state per mile on roads. What is going on here? Why do they suddenly need so much money?
Well, part of what they're saying is true, that some of the roads and bridges are falling apart. And the reason is they don't maintain them. That There's plenty of money that's been available over the last 20 years to maintain the bridges and highways and roads. And I'll give you an example of the way this system works, or the way the legislature works. In 1990, they jumped the gas tax from 11 cents to 21 cents. It almost doubled the gas tax. And they took in the last 6 months of that year, I think it was 1990, an extra $125 million or so of money from the increase in the tax. Now, they did it, and I remember the debates on this when they voted this tax increase, is that all this money is going to roads and bridges and highways. Well, what happened was AAA came out with a scathing editorial in their newsletter about several months after the gas tax passed, and they pointed out that out of the $125 million or so, only $7 million went to the roads and highways. The other $118 or $120 million went into the general fund.
Oh, man. So, in other words, it's the same kind of, you know, corruptive practices that we've been used to all along. And of course, this is exactly what the average person would expect. The problem isn't that there isn't any money. The problem is that they're spending it, you know, they're spending it poorly. They're not allocating the money they promised to allocate. And, you know, this is what happens.
Well, not only that, they do that with schools. I mean, some of these school superintendents who want to get overrides passed for new buildings, they'll deliberately not maintain the buildings. We've heard too many stories from too many people in too many schools to not know that it's true. And I remember once going to an elementary school, and not in Wrentham, but in a nearby town, and they showed me the door, one of the side doors in one of the schools, and it needed a real paint job, and it looked like it hadn't been painted in 20 years. So I said to the guy, you know what? I said, I'll donate the gallon of paint, and I'll scrape it down and paint it if I have to. And he says, oh, no, we don't want to do that because the school superintendent is sniffing around for an override, and he wants to have the parents come through and see how run down the school.
Oh, yeah.
So they'll vote yes.
Absolutely. In Newton, where I live, you know, the state mandates a certain percentage of the school's funds be used for maintenance. I forget what the percentage is, but it's a percentage. And they have the school committee has admitted that they don't spend that. You know, they just ignore the law and spend far less. Yeah, yeah. So what's going to happen? What do you think is going to happen? What's
well,
the process
course,
that's going
the,
on
the,
with this road
the
thing?
The rumor is that they came out with this threat of a gas tax increase the same day that the governor came out with a casino proposal. And everyone says this is no coincidence. I mean, cause this study group's been around for several months, and suddenly they come out on the same day as the governor.
Yeah.
So you know, he's saying, well, do you want casinos or do you want the gas tax increase? That was the subtle message that came out.
The famous false choice.
Yeah, and you don't have to make that. I mean, I personally am opposed to casinos, and CLT has had kind of a negative position, although Barbara Anderson has a more libertarian view. She tends to think, well, if people want it, let them have it. But by and large, if you look at it, I addressed an anti-casino rally down in Middleborough about a month and a half ago. And I pointed out that, and this is not something new, that they say the casinos are going to help taxes, you're going to get property tax relief. Well, the most casinos in the country outside of Las Vegas are in New Jersey and Connecticut, and they're two of the most heavily taxed states in the country.
Yeah, it doesn't happen, and you know these people think that they can get money out of the thin air. What they really need to do is make the state spend it wisely, and you know until that happens, it's just you know we're going to have these problems. And then there's the whole problem of the big dig. I've always thought, and we're sort of running out of time, but I've always thought that the best way to pay for the big dig is to do what every other, you know, project in America does, put tolls at that particular thing. So put a toll at the Ted Williams Tunnel, put a toll at the Central Artery. The problem, of course, would be you'd be paying $20 in tolls. But at least what it would do is it would have the users of that particular thing pay for it. But anyway, this this is all frightening stuff. I'd love to have you back on and talk about the August 3rd thing in the CLT update, the pension tidal wave, because you and Barbara are really right on that. That is something coming over the horizon that's going to really it's going to cause a lot of trouble. If people want to read about this and other things, they can go to CLTG.org. Is that the best place?
And if they want to join CLT, they can go to our website. It's easy to join right on our homepage.
Great. And believe me, it's the best value for your money in Massachusetts is joining Citizens for Limited Taxation. All right, Chip Faulkner, Executive Director of Citizens for Limited Taxation. It's great having you on. Thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks, Brian.
All right, this is Brian Kamiker, Mass Resistance Radio. We'll be right back. And we're back. Brian Kamiker, Mass Resistance Radio, Radio Free Massachusetts, here on WRCA Radio, broadcasting out of Cambridge and Boston. Okay, in our last segment, we talked to Citizens for Limited Taxation, talking about, among other things, how the governor appears to be pushing gambling casinos in Massachusetts to pay for some of their shortfalls on the roads and bridges, shortfalls which really don't actually exist, but are there because of the issues of spending money and allocating and, you know, mismanagement by the legislature.
Corruption,
yes. But this business of gambling casinos is deeper than just, well, do we want to put in more gambling? I mean, there are some serious issues involved with a society that does this. And we're very pleased to have Mike Heath of the Christian Civic League of Maine here to talk about how this has affected Maine, where I guess they've been doing it there. Is that right, Mike?
Hi, Brian. Hi, Amy. Yes,
hi.
We're on the way to operating the full range of what's in law is known as Class 3 gambling, which is casino table games and slot machines. Maine had been without these, without this scourge, until a couple years ago, when a group called Penn National out of Pennsylvania, which is, I think, mostly in racetracks, horse racing, came to Maine and, through referendum, managed and working with agricultural fairs, managed to establish a slot machine palace in Bangor, Maine. So they're going to install about 1,200 slot machines. There's a multi-million-dollar facility that's being built on the Penobscot River there in Bangor right now.
Okay. So this is just getting started?
Just getting started in Maine, although this isn't the first time, Brian. I was interested to learn that in 1905, the Christian Civic League of Maine, the group that I'm the leader of, got slot machines ejected from Bangor, Maine.
Wow.
So this is an issue that raises its ugly head in sort of a cyclical.
Well, you've been doing some research on the effects on society on this. And what can you tell us?
Well, we're just getting started in digging into the current numbers, but it's no mystery to people who are fair-minded or to do any sort of reading or research on the issue of gambling that it destroys families. Just thinking about it in just off the top of our heads, we know that because the money ends up being taken away from something else. And in most cases with slot machines, the large percentage of people who go and play these slot machines are the people who should be putting that money into savings or putting that money into the kids or putting that money into milk money. So they're taking money away from something that's valuable to the family and that helps to build the family and make the family responsible and virtuous, and they're just dumping it into these devices, which
right.
are designed in a very sophisticated way to lure them in, to draw them in, and to keep them playing. It's a whole reason for the slot machine.
People actually become addicted to it, research
yeah.
shows, too. And one of the biggest proofs of that is the governments themselves, the state governments that promote gambling, recognize that there's an addiction problem, don't they?
The slot machine, they do. And the slot machine is it's the crack cocaine of gambling. Slot machine has become the crack cocaine. It's a mindless thing. You sit there and these things spin, and it creates the impression that it's good, that the icons are going to line up, and when they do, you're going to win something. But it's all controlled.
Right. You know, I've been reading some of the new research on this gambling addiction has shown that there's actually a chemical reaction in your brain of an addicted person. Gambling really chemically changes a person, and it's a true addiction. And you know, the people that are pushing this are playing on the people's weaknesses toward this, and it really does. I mean, the stories that I've heard and read about of families, you know, people blowing enormous amounts of money are just tearful.
There's a great article that listeners should go and read on our website. It's called, they can just go out and Google it, The Secrets of the Slot Machine, The Secrets of the Slot Machine, written by Dennis Bailey. And it'll give folks some really excellent information to think about as they ponder whether they want their neighborhood, their culture, their society, their kids, their grandkids, their spouse to be put in places where these devices are going to...
That's at www.cclmaine.org.
That's right. Or leaguerecord.com.
Okay.
Either one goes the same.
The other interesting bit of research that comes out is that the local economy of the towns is not helped as much as people would think. And this is something that apparently the gambling executives themselves will admit.
Right. You get a boost in the early years because of construction costs and, you know, and gearing the thing up. But then once it gets going, you've got basically what the slot machine palace or casino contributes to the neighborhood is some jobs that tend to be lower paying, except for if you've got a casino, except for the folks who are running those table games, they're well paid. But for the most part, you're talking about just regular pay or low paid jobs, maybe even lower pay than you might have if you were building a culture or building a community that included entertainment possibilities that were more traditional and less and did less to erode values and less to challenge mm-hmm. virtue. You know, restaurants, movies, bowling alleys.
Hey, Mike, also on your website, you have a really good article, A Biblical Perspective on Casino Gambling. And, one of the things I read, and I was surprised, I didn't know this, it says where casinos and racinos thrive, sin abounds. And you give the example, in the first 6 years of casinos in Minnesota, the crime rate in counties with casinos increased more than twice as fast as non-casino counties. Robberies increased by 20% despite increased expenditures by law enforcement agencies. 62% of gamblers committed illegal acts as a result of their gambling. Gamblers Anonymous survey showed that 47% admitted to stealing to finance their gambling. So, I mean, that's really shocking.
This is all of peace, too. I know that Mass Resistance does some of the best work in the country on the homosexual issue, and this is all tied together. This is the corruption of our culture, the destruction. It's an attack. It's a full frontal attack.
Culture of death, as we often like to say.
The culture of death. You know, Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden couldn't come up with something more effective than this to destroy the West and to destroy our region. Look at New England. You live in the only state that has that wacky same-sex marriage.
Now don't rub it in.
now you're talking seriously about probably multiple casinos. I mean, I haven't had time to follow it, but
what goes on in the minds of these politicians where they would ignore the evidence
besides demon possession, or
well, yeah, besides that, you work with a lot of interact with politicians, I should say. And study them. What takes normal people and want them to put this on their society?
Well, I think it's, you know, there's a great verse in the Bible that says, and it's so simple, and people just ignore it, and I think we all ignore it at our peril. You can't serve both God and money. You can't serve both the right thing and money. You can't serve, put any sort of spin or nuance on it. But I think what happens, what I've noticed in politics in Maine is what drives our politics now is money, power, pragmatism. And you don't have an adequate counterweight anymore, you're always going to have power and you're always going to have money because Christianity teaches and Judaism teaches we live in a fallen world. It's corrupted, so you're always going to have that to deal with. But what I think our country benefited from, and especially in the first 200-300 years, was a very robust moral tradition that was right in the mix of politics, right in there, right in pragmatism's face, so to speak, challenging it and saying, we can't serve both God and money. There is such a thing as righteousness. There is such a thing as virtue. We dare not forget it. We got to go for that. We got to remember it. And it's hard, and it takes discipline. And maybe sometimes it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but it's still, truth is there, and we got to pursue it. We know what's, with gambling, everybody who's hearing our voice right now knows. I mean, there's no, we're not talking rocket science here.
I know, it's, all you have to do is look around and see where it happens. We're talking with Mike Heath, president of the Christian Civic League of Maine. Mike, what can people do, do you think, to stop this?
Well, in Maine, there's a vote coming up, and, politics is a small part of most people's life, thank God. But on the other hand, you've got, because it's such a small part of so many people's lives, you've got corruption running rampant, and you've got, I think, to a large extent, bad people gaining power, people who have really no interest in righteousness or virtue.
Mm-hmm.
And so what people need to do is vote, and what people need to do is get involved with mass resistance. And what people need to do is, I love you, Brian, because you're one of the few people around who say, and it needs to be said louder and more clearly by more voices, look, if you're feeling angry, maybe you should. And go ahead, let that anger go in the appropriate direction.
Well, thanks, Mike. I appreciate that. That is what people need to do. Anyway, thank you very much for your thoughts on this. This is the kind of thing that people really need to hear before they dive into
something. We need to give the website again, cclmaine.org.
CCLMAINE.org.
Or you said the alternate is League Record?
Yeah, leaguerecord.com.
And
we just opened a political action committee, which is focused on encouraging a no vote on question one November 6th in Maine. So anybody who's listening who has family in Maine, or if your signal gets up into Maine, there's a vote on November 6th. Question one is about the expansion of slot machines. We have a website, gamblingwiththewaylifeshouldbe.com.
Okay.
Gamblingwiththewaylifeshouldbe.com. And people can go there and find out everything they never wanted to know about gambling.
Okay. Mike Heath, Christian Civic League of Maine, God bless you, and thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks, Brian. Thank you, Amy. Keep up your great work.
All right. Thank you. This is Brian Kamiker, Mass Resistance Radio. We'll be right back. And we're back for our final quick segment. Brian Kamiker, Mass Resistance Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, the kinds of things that you've heard are in many ways very disturbing, but this is what happens in a society when nobody stands up and says no. This is the same kind of thing that Thomas Jefferson and the Founding Fathers warned us about. That's where we came up with the name Mass Resistance. This is the word that, resistance was the word that Jefferson and Adams and many of the others used. You must get involved. You can get involved by going to the Mass Resistance website, contacting us, sending us an email, get on our email list. We send out emails. The other thing that needs to happen is this doesn't come for free. Our support comes from people like you, ladies and gentlemen. You can get involved and support by sending a check to Mass Resistance Radio Show, Mass Resistance Radio Show, P.O. Box 1612. That's Waltham, Massachusetts, 02454, Mass Resistance Radio Show, P.O. Box 1612, Waltham, Massachusetts, 02454. Or go to the website, massresistance.org, and you can donate by credit card from there. You can and believe me, getting involved is absolutely absolutely necessary. You know, the legislators, they react to the other side if that's all they ever hear.
And the other side is really in the state house lobbying for this trans bill right now.
Right.
Big time.
They already had, if you can believe this, a trans lobby day, which...
And they're sending people in individually to tell their soft stories.
This is a very organized effort. Okay. Until next week, Brian Kamenker, Mass Resistance Radio. Talk to you then.